Hi, this is Amy. I'm here today with Dry Eye Diva, Dr. Leslie O'Dell, and special guest from Calgary, Canada, Dr. Rob Klepfer. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks so much.
So I thought it would be great if we could come together today and discuss seasonal allergies and how the seasonal allergies can really sort of mess up some of our beauty routines. I know for myself, who is currently in New England, allergy season definitely wreaks havoc on my beauty routine because my eyes water a lot and my eyes can be very bloodshot and I don't always like to put on makeup, but at the same time, I don't want to go outside and have people thinking that my red eyes are due to partying all night or, you know, something like that. I know I work a little bit too much, but sometimes my eyes just become a little bit more red during allergy season. So I would love if you could both explain to me and your patients really what can we do when we have really red eyes, say during allergy season or just in general, because I think it could also be a chronic condition. So is there something we can do to keep ourselves pretty without compromising our eye health?
Yeah. Well, so redness is your eye's way of telling you something's wrong. So to us as a doctor, we think of inflammation, but that can come from, you know, lots of reasons, allergies being one. Sometimes if you are logging long hours on digital devices and not getting good sleep, you might also have inflammation and redness from that due to more of like a evaporation of your tears or dry eye. So really talking to your eye care provider is always number one, because we can help to uncover what's causing the redness. But you're right. A lot of people do have that negative, you know, view of the redness, wondering what you were up to the night before. I mean, even some medications that we prescribe regularly create redness for some people. So we have to have that talk with them to explain that. You know, so they can say, you know, let them know it's from this medication versus something else. But I have had people, you know, very upset by comments made from friends and family about the redness, being fearful that they have something that's contagious, you know, like the dreaded pink eye or conjunctivitis to us. So the first thing is figuring out what the underlying reason for the redness is before you self-medicate. And I'm sure that, Rob, you have experience with that. You know, you are talking to patients and they've already used some kind of over-the-counter remedy, whether it is allergy or get the red out, to kind of mask what they're seeing before they even get to us for help.
I agree, Leslie. Absolutely. So I may not wear makeup, although I still want to look beautiful, right? I still want to go out in public. And you're so right. When it comes to patients, I find that patients will certainly try a couple remedies before they come and see us. So when we see them, they've usually gone through maybe one or two drops, and perhaps those drops have helped a little bit already. But at times they've definitely made it worse already. So I couldn't agree more. The step one would be trying to do your best. First of all, consult with an eye care professional. From there, we're able to assess exactly the cause of the redness. So if it is allergies, there's definitely allergy drops that we can prescribe or even recommend over the counter that would be the best approach to take care of the underlying cause. Beyond that, if it's just a redness caused from an infection, of course, we have prescriptions that can help that. But if it's a dry eye issue, well, there's a whole host of severities. And there's a whole host of reasons why dryness can happen. So really before it would be discussion beyond what to use, it would be understanding just first of all of what the diagnosis is. And then we can start having that better discussion and educating on how to approach and help that patient.
So basically what you're saying, it's sort of, shall we say, it's like having a pimple. Some people will just cover it up with makeup, go outside and say, okay, everything's going to be okay. And it'll go away. But the problem could arise is that if we have, say, acne, there could be an underlying cause of that. So and we shouldn't just cover it up and ignore it because there could be other health issues. So with red eye, if our eyes happen to be really red and on a regular basis, it could just be, say, just one day because we had long hours at the office and we're staring at the screens too long, or allergies are just more exacerbated or could be more chronic. So if we do see this red eye on a more regular basis, would that be, say, what, daily? Or like what would you recommend to patients to have them actually contact their eye doctor? Because most people, at least again, me being the patient, I will try to do everything in my power to solve a solution before I call a doctor. So what would you recommend for patients who do have red eye? When should they call a doctor? When should they know?
I would say you have to start changing that mindset. I feel like the sooner we see some of these things, the better it is. So, you know, sometimes I'll get the call and it's been going on for a week or two, and I wish I would have seen them from day one or two. So I think that with a red eye, I mean, some of them are going to be self-limiting, like, you know, your analogy to a acne, it might go away on its own. But still, what was causing that to begin with? Could it cycle through that again? I mean, and in the case of the seasonal allergy, you know, usually you know, because you know, like your springtime, you're going to be puffy, red, watery, itchy, and this, and maybe the fall also. Mm-hmm. But I think what people don't realize is we've come a long way in the treatments. And I actually, when I was in high school myself, I had a horrific ragweed allergy. My eyes would like swell shut. My parents like did nothing for me. You know, I would not go out of the house for a week because I looked like I was in the boxing match. But now you don't have to look like that. Like, we have medications that work really good. They are, you know, not uncomfortable to use, and they actually really make you feel better. So I think just getting to us sooner is always helpful.
Well, also in terms of medication, that's a good question too, because I have a friend who's a top model, and she told me that it's really important, obviously, for fashion models to have bright white eyes when they go to either a photo shoot or the runway, but they always want their eyes to be really, really white. So they get these basically over-the-counter drops from anywhere. I mean, you can get them anywhere just to make your eyes whiter. So she asked me, is that safe to be buying just drops, because it's pretty omnipresent. They need to have bright white eyes, so, and they work a lot, and you know, it's an industry.
They're flying, the makeup,
and events, and they're always out there, and they always have to look their best. So the eye whitener thing, the red eye, they can't have red eye because that will literally compromise their career. But at the same time, if people are just putting in drops to make their eyes whiter, so my question goes back to, what do we do? Does it have to be a prescription medication, or does that go back to the conversation of call your eye doctor and say, look, my eyes are really red, or I do a lot of long haul travel and, you know, a lot of events and I'm out late at night. What do we ask you for? Because I don't want to have to take a medication every time I have red eye.
Yeah, Rob, I was going to say, you weigh in on this, because I know you've had some patients with some even rebound redness from this practice.
Absolutely. And it's a perfect analogy for the idea of whether you're a top model, which of course you're in front of a camera all the time, and you have to have that appearance of those white eyes. But it really stands true for general public and our patients as well. People come in to us if they have a red eye, if they do end up coming into us, because they don't want that red eye. So step one for me would be, the great thing is there's still pharmacists. If you go to a pharmacy, if that's where you go first to pick up a drop, that conversation can at least happen first. Otherwise, if you're in a family doctor, that seems to be one of the places that patients are stopping in first before they see us. So again, that is a way, like Leslie had mentioned, it's a way for us to try to transition that eye care professionals become the primary care professional for the eyes. But I've had patients that if they go to the pharmacy, I usually tell them to avoid generic drops. And so exactly like Leslie had alluded to, one specific patient I can remember is that they came in and they had been using a generic, just get the red out drop for about 7 days, using it four times a day. And what happened there is that they showed me a picture of what it was initially what it looked like. But when they had seen me, their eyes looked like red Christmas lights. They were lit up so badly. And that's because those generic drops can hold a lot of chemicals in there that are just irritating the eyes more than they're doing good. So I would say that if we are going to get drops initially without consulting with an eye care professional first, avoid generic drops. That would, at least for me, be one of the easiest steps to start with.
Rob, it's interesting that you mentioned that patients have come to you with really red eyes, and you have to ask them what have they been using, because there are also beauty practices out there that can cause really red eyes in a different sense, because there could be an allergic reaction to the chemicals, as you mentioned. So have you had patients come to your clinic with, say, allergies in a different sense, because allergies to the products they're using that have caused their eyes to become red or watery or irritated?
Absolutely. I sure have. And I'm sure Leslie can say the same thing as well. That idea of even eyelash extensions is becoming a big one. And I know that's not necessarily new. It's been going on for a while. But I would say in the last couple years, I've seen many cases. And again, there's those specific cases that you do remember. One lady came in and she had just had eyelash extensions put on. No glue or anything was in the eye itself, but exactly to your point, Amy, she was having such a reaction to perhaps even the process. We had that discussion. And the great thing is, what I try to do each visit with my patients is that making sure that they leave there with something to learn. So they've learned something from the visit. And really, if we can give our patients knowledge, that becomes power for them. So trying to educate them, instead of just saying, use this drop and this will get better, if we can educate the patient on exactly what's going on and what to look out for, that can help them for the future. So this specific lady came in, again, she had just got eyelash extensions on, and end up looking at her eyes, and the amount of reaction that was going on in her eyelids was tremendous. It was both eyes. The great thing is that although I've had a couple patients that would not listen and take off those eyelashes, she was very much up for going and getting those eyelashes removed right away. I told her to take a break from any eyelash extensions for at least a month. And it's not like as eye doctors, we are against any cosmetic products around the eye itself, certainly including those eyelash extensions. But as long as the process is sterile, and as long as we're not trying to disrupt the anatomy of the eye as well, because even if I let Leslie speak to this, a lot of those products, depending on mascara, depending on the position, or if we're using eyelash extensions, that can start altering, say, even the tear film in the eye, for example, and that itself could lead to the dryness and the red eyes.
Well, what Leslie explains really well, too, it's not, it's more than that. You can also offend the meibomian gland and have more reactions, and it goes back to the chemicals. So it isn't always just the application of a product, but what are the chemicals in the product, whether it be the drops or the eyeliner or the mascara, the eye makeup remover, there are really a lot of potential offenders out there.
So Rob, how does your conversation go? Do you wait for a problem to happen with your, you know, cosmetic wearing patients, or do you proactively have a conversation? It depends on what beauty habits you're seeing. How does that look for you in your practice?
Yeah, it's a great, great question. For me, my mentality for anything, especially when it comes to just when someone's sitting in front of me, I always like to try to be more proactive with any education instead of being reactive. Now, there's certainly times that we're going to have patients that come in and we see that problem and we have to take care of it. But if we can be proactive, again, it comes back to the idea of trying to educate patients the best that we can so that we can avoid these situations. So my discussion certainly becomes for anyone that's wearing makeup, just letting them know certain areas that we should avoid having the makeup on, having that makeup removed before we go to sleep, because exactly like Amy had just mentioned there, when makeup is sitting across those meibomian glands, and those are the glands that are making that oil layer of the tears, well, we're now disrupting that oil tear film. Mm-hmm. And suddenly that can lead to all that evaporation. So trying to put those steps in for that discussion, again, getting that done before we see those problems is really in the best interest of not only us, but most definitely our patients as well.
That's a really great point. Because I guess everyone is told you should get your eyes checked, your vision checked once a year. It's probably a really good practice that not everyone does, but you also have to realize that eye care providers can really help with other questions. And sometimes it isn't just about your vision, but it is about your quality of life and the advice that you can offer them about their beauty and hygiene practices could really, you know, really help improve their quality of life and overall their vision. So I think it's really important that you're explaining that it's good to have a conversation with your eye care provider, because there are ways that we can really help ourselves be even more beautiful.
Yeah, I was going to say, I really applaud you for doing that, because too many doctors, you know, really never even broach the subject. Sometimes male physicians in particular feel awkward in this conversation. So I think it's great that you're doing that. I think that really we got to start targeting like the 12 and up crowd, because that's where they're starting to learn these bad practices. I've met women in their 40s that were doing the waterline eyeliner over the meibomian glands since they were 14 or 16. You know, no one ever told them that that was not the best practice. So I think that, like you said, having them lead by learning something is a great way to do your day-to-day.
Yes. You know what, Amy, I love your point about the idea that as eye doctors, we're a lot more than just glasses and contacts. And that is something that not only do we need to continue to educate our patients about, but even other eye care, or sorry, other healthcare professionals that we can collaborate and work with to make sure that our patients are getting that proper care. Because it's so much of what we see every day is that people might come in thinking that they need a change in a glasses or contact lens prescription, but all of a sudden we see a reaction, say, going on to an eyelash extension, or in fact their eyes are so dry because I've seen tattooed eyeliner. I'm hoping I'm getting that correct. Again, I don't know my makeup too well, but I've seen tattooed eyeliner where it's actually starting to get into the meibomian gland area that's certainly affecting the whole anatomy of the eye. So I really try to use pictures as much as I can. I really find that pictures are worth 1,000 words. If I can take a picture, say, with my iPhone through the microscope that we use, if we have a microscope that has a camera array mounted on it, or just pulling a picture up even on the internet at times, a lot of these will be a lot easier to educate our patients instead of words, because there's, I think we can all agree, no matter those words that we have a discussion with in the exam room. And it's like, if I go to a mechanic, it's hard to remember all those terms. So sometimes just pulling up pictures is really worth a whole lot leaving there.
Yeah, I would say 99% of the time. A funny encounter I have had was with a woman that was a very dedicated false eyelash user. And it was actually a first time meeting, that I was with her. So I was trying really hard to educate her to the blepharitis that was been created from her lashes. And I took the photo, showed it to her. And she was like, though, that was all there because of the drops.
No, but what did you see? What did she see? Because obviously she wasn't seeing that in the mirror. So when you showed that picture to her, what were you illustrating to her?
So I was showing her eyelashes under this high magnification and what almost would look to the patient like dandruff. Now, it happened to maybe have a little yellow tinge because of an eye drop I did put in, but it was not from the eye drop. But she just was so emphatic that it was not her beauty routine.
So it was more than morning crustiness.
Yeah. Yes, for sure.
Not
so
very pretty, right?
She will someday have that realization and think, oh, that one eye doctor told me that one time. So every once in a while, the picture does not work as well as I hope. But 99% of the time, if you show somebody that, they're completely appalled, because it's a part that you can't really see very well without the help of a photo.
Well, I think that's really great. And as Rob mentioned, also working with your colleagues and other specialties to address patients' lifestyle choices, even dermatologists, because as we're all very well aware, what's good for our skin may not be that great for our eye health. So it's good to open up these conversations, and it's really good to help patients understand that it's very important to speak with your eye care provider about things other than just your annual vision checkup, because they can help unearth some other things that could potentially help your quality of life. So thank you very much, both of you, for joining us today. And I look forward to speaking with you again soon. Thanks for your education.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, thank you so much.
I appreciate you having me on this Dry Eye Diva. I love it, and so it's much appreciated that you bring a Canadian in to have this conversation, because of course no matter where we are, it affects everyone, right? So the idea of cosmetics and beauty, it really extends everywhere, whether you're the top model or whether it's our patients coming to us. So it's always a great conversation to have. So
and
thank
Rob,
you.
Maybe next time you can give us an eye makeup tutorial after you learn the difference of the different products.
It sounds like a quiz. I like it.
Fantastic. Great. Thank you both very much.
Thank you for having me.